5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello, welcome to another Tech Talk. It is I, Stephen Scott, back with you again, and I've got Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet here as well. Hello to you, Robin.
Hello to you, Stephen.
And Andy's here as well, the all-round good guy. That's what Sarah says in the script. All-round great value and sticking up for Android, Andrew Wynn.
Yes. I added in the Android bit. I believe it was Robin that said I'm all-round great value, which is fantastic. Yeah. Thank you, Robin.
Yep. Yeah, I knew I would never have written that, so clearly someone else did. Yeah. coming up, we're going to be talking about Google Lookout today because, it's launched in the UK and it's around the world as well. Also, could a new Android TV dongle from Google be around the corner? And if you're thinking about buying a face mask, you know, we're all buying face masks now and some of us are buying, you know, hundreds and hundreds and thousands of disposable ones, which is a really bad idea for the environment, I imagine. Or perhaps you're buying one of those reusable ones that you can wash again. Well, there might be one. I don't know if you, I wouldn't imagine you can wash this one. But it's got bone conduction speakers or headset built in, which sounds rather interesting. I'm going to talk about that. And of course, we have all your emails as well. So plenty to get through. But first, Robin Christofferson. Turn to you, because...
Apology, correction number 48.
It's time for a correction, yes.
What went wrong last time?
So poor William Lomas, who has now submitted two demos that we've used on Ira, really, really good demos. He DM'd me on Twitter and said, it was me that submitted those, because we said last week that it was somebody else altogether.
We said it was Billy Burrell.
And... In my inbox, because they both kindly sent me emails, William with the demos and William in his how it comes up in the inbox. So William Burrell also sent me a dot to dot poem that I'm going to use on there. I'm going to make it an extra episode. Have you heard of dot to dot? Fantastic. Up
terrible
to episode 1302 or something. So we're going to. He did a brilliant poem. William Burrell, that he knocked out in 2 hours. And it's just absolutely fantastic. So yeah, tune into that on the Dot to Dot podcast. But anyway, so those two emails were sitting literally side by side in my inbox. And one was from William Lomas and one was from William Burrell. So I just got them wrong when I quickly checked who that was from when last week we said, well, who was the demo from? So sorry, William Lomas, brilliant demos. Sorry, Billy. So Billy's a listener, isn't he? So yeah.
Yes, he is, yes. Not anymore, yeah. But he is.
No, I know.
He was.
Well, he didn't get in touch to say it wasn't him. Anyway, maybe he's catching up on emails, on episodes. So yeah. Sorry, guys. Sorry, William. L.
We'll let you off. Now, I've been known here on Tech Talk never to do my homework, so I can't really criticise you, Robin. It's not fair to criticise you for that. Yeah, let's go for that. Listen, we're going to get into the emails shortly. Also, as I say, we're going to talk about some of the news that's going on as well. Do you know the amount of people who email this program saying, get rid of this email jingle? It's astonishing, the amount of people who want rid of it. I think we should do a poll on Twitter. Can we do this, Andy? Is this possible? Is the technology, does it exist for us to ask people if they want to keep it or not?
Of course. We would need to get permission from the RNIB Connect Radio bigwigs.
Oh, well, that's that then.
Yeah. Who's in charge of social? I don't even know who's in charge of social this week, but I'll ask them and we'll put a poll up and get people thinking, how do they like the jingles?
Yeah, yeah. Should we keep email or not? I think it should stay, personally. Anyway, here it is.
Email. More of it.
We get email. We get your email every day.
Bing bong.
Here's your mail today.
If it drives you crazy, then here it is. You can listen to it. We should just play all the way, right through this whole bit.
Half an hour of it.
On loop. let's get into the email inbox because it is bursting. Let's see how many. But now, remember, of course, we do calculate in pages for some reason. I've still yet to understand. So how many pages of emails do we have today, Andy?
53. 15.
Oh, my 15.
Goodness. 15. Goodness me.
Let's see how many you can get through.
We'll get through two pages.
Two.
Go, Andy. Go.
Well, look, we started off talking about confusion between Bill and William. And it's worth pointing out that the amount of people in our email inbox who have the same name as well. Julian has contacted us to start with, saying there are a couple of coincidences between your first, well, between your correspondent Julian on Tech Talk back in episode 336 and myself. Obviously our first name, plus we're both reading CJ Sampson's Shard-like series, but we part company over the Dolphin Easy Reader app. He, as he said, comes across as Mr. Negative about the app, and previously on RNIB Reading Services, I assume that that was the same Julian. Surely there can't be three of us. But for the second time, I feel compelled to respond as Mr. Positive. I'm content with the method of delivery and the quality thereof. I'm not knowledgeable enough to give an opinion as to say if I think Julian is wrong. I just don't understand where he's coming from, and I find some of his points too obscurely technical. I would urge anyone not to be put off. I've been using the same app since August of 2018 on an iPad Mini 2 with VoiceOver. The app is straightforward to use. I can download and return books at my convenience. What more could I want? Well, download access to the whole catalogue would be nice. But that's another topic and not really one for Tech Talk, although I should add that the number of times I find a book in the catalogue, when it is in the catalogue, but not available for download, has muchly reduced. So thanks to RNIB Reading Services for that. Julian's preferred method of listening is Memory Stick, although his sovereign player, so why not cut out the download middleman and instead have his books sent on Memory Stick by RNIB Library. Now, as Stephen suggested for emailers, I'm putting in my location. It would be just too much of a coincidence if the other Julian lived in the same town. Yeah, if he's next door.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, your correspondent Steve on Tech Talk 333, still using a Nokia with TALX?
Talks, yes.
Has an iPad Mini using VoiceOver and is thinking of getting an iPhone. Sounds like me in 2017. I bought an iPhone and I have never regretted it. Face ID hasn't been a problem, probably because I'm more of an armchair user. I know Stephen has previously spoken about the frustrations when using Face ID whilst on the move.
Terrible.
Stephen moves.
That's a harsh, harsh statement to make that I would dare to move. But please go on.
If I were buying it now, it would be the iPhone SE 2020, which I know Stephen agrees with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Steve should worry about not having a home button. The one finger slide up from the bottom of the screen is not difficult.
No, no, it's terrible. Oh, no, I don't
horses
like it.
Horses.
What have you done, Julian?
I don't like it. I don't like it. I mean, I've got the iPhone 11 Pro. I keep going back to do various things. I actually use it mainly as a camera. That's really what I use it for, a video camera, which is very good at, obviously. But no, I just cannot get to grips with it. I know that it's, especially now with Backtap, that feature, that could actually be something that could help, you know, especially trying to get to Control Center or notifications. You could use the Backtap feature instead. As a way of getting to it, and that means you don't have to really worry about the swipes. I think I would love it, though, if you could have it where when you look at the phone, it actually takes you right into the, you know, essentially where your apps are. Instead, it unlocks it, and then you have to then swipe to get into the phone. That bit's irritating. Mm-hmm. I think if you do it without VoiceOver, it's actually okay. But if you add VoiceOver to the mix, that's where the problems start. That's been my experience.
Home button's best. Under the duvet.
Yeah.
Yeah, in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to have the phone outside. I think you're right, though, Julian. You make the point that if you're at home and you're using this at home, then, you know, I think you've got a bit more time and a bit more patience to do it. So when you're in a hurry or you're doing something or you're in public, or, you know, it gets a bit more frustrating. Also, I think for people with low vision, like my wife, for example, who's, you know, always got the phone right up to her face, you know, she always has to remember to pull the phone away quickly enough so it catches her face, and oftentimes it doesn't. So, and she can't see that it hasn't done it, so it goes on. Anyway,
I do think that we should preempt lots of people emailing in saying that Face ID works for them. We absolutely acknowledge that it does.
Yeah, absolutely. If it works for you, that's great.
Yeah.
But it doesn't for me, so I don't like it.
Oh dear, Julian, what have you done? Julian, just to say, he is saying he's using an iPad Mini 2.
It's got a home button.
He does. Yeah, it doesn't like using earphones and finds the sound listening to audiobooks better on the iPad. But yeah, that's Julian. That, yeah. Julian emails in from Worthing and he says, P.S. After using all that one finger typing on my iPad Mini, I need an energy boost. I'm off to eat some chocolate straight from the fridge.
Oh, come on, Julian. What is wrong with you? Oh, there's so many. Oh, I need to sit down with this guy. We need to spend time together. I need to explain everything so that you understand it from my point of view and all the ways that I've never been able to get my wife to do. Okay, moving on.
Right. Well, another apology here because we've got quite a few emails from Richard Foster in Aberdeen. Richard, we love your emails. It's just unfortunately we've just not got round to them all. So let's all just group them up into one big bunch and read them.
It's a Richard email fest.
Yes. Hello all. Sorry, this might be the kind of query you hate, but I'll ask anyway. Being realistic, could you give me some guidance about how long technical equipment can be expected to last? This came to my mind recently because my work is with pianos, real pianos, he says. I was working on a Bechstein. Now that could be Bechstein, Bechstein. Or that could be Bechstein.
Yeah.
Oh, Robin knows. Robin knows. which is 120 years old and still has plenty of life in it.
And he's clearly never had to change the battery. Oops, sorry.
Yeah, he's not plugged it in for a, yeah, hasn't got Bluetooth. Clearly the kind of thing we're talking about isn't expected to go on that long. You have been known to mention the Nokia 3310 phone. Shock horror, I still use one. It's 19 years old and is still an emergency mobile phone for use when the signal is bad on my main phone, which is on a different network. My Nokia's battery became ineffective a few years ago, so I bought a generic replacement, which is fine. I've had to replace my main mobile phone after nearly 3 years because it became very unreliable. The last thing you need in a mobile phone. Some thoughts on equipment longevity would be welcome. Many
okay,
thanks.
Well, let's start there. One. Yeah, okay, let's start there because I think Richard brings up an excellent point. Why is it that you can have a piano for 120 years and it works fine and my iPhone's dead in the water after five? I mean, the answer to this is software, isn't it, Robin? I mean, let's be honest, it's software because ultimately the software that is being created to work on these devices is updating and it's therefore giving a date, an age, if you like, on the device it's on because the software requires more power or better cameras or better processing or whatever it needs and therefore makes the phone, makes the device itself old quickly. Whereas, you know, think about any other piece of equipment. I mean, if you even take something and you decide, a lot of people I know who listen to the show who still use Windows XP.
Yep,
you shouldn't. You shouldn't, but you do. And that's fine. But if you know that Windows XP is essentially finished and no more updates are coming and all that, if you took that machine offline and you just wanted to use it for example, my purpose might be just as an audio editor, and that's all it did, then you'd be fine. You could use that computer forever, I guess, you know, until it basically gave up the ghost completely. But what does giving up the ghost actually even mean? I mean, that's another question. What does that even mean? I mean, you think about a computer. I've got a computer in the loft. It's an old Dell Latitude from about 15, 20 years ago. It still works fine with XP. If I connect it to the internet, it goes a bit bananas and says, oh, this doesn't work, that doesn't work. But if you don't, if you just use it for one or two core apps, there's really no reason why it shouldn't work forever. So it's more about attitude, I think. We live in a consumer society. That's the bottom line. We live in a consumer society built around the idea that you just have to keep buying stuff because then that keeps people in business. If you create a product that is brilliant, that will last forever, that company will go out of business. Because it'll only sell so many, and then it'll die off. So, you know, it's just unfortunate the society we are now in.
I certainly agree. I mean, build quality, a Bechstein, you know, there were cheaper pianos 100-odd years ago that wouldn't have lasted until now. But I think build quality is important. And, you know, we replaced our washing machine that lasted for 21 years. And the drum literally split in half one day. But that was the, you know, it had been working
only
fine
after
up until
21
then.
Years. Only I demand a refund.
And the chap said, you know, that this, you know, one that I'm going to replace it with, which is, in our opinion, the best one, it was a Bosch, you know, it wasn't cheap. He said it's not going to last even a quarter as long. Yeah. Because that's just the nature of things these days. You know, even high end these days isn't the same build quality. But at the same time, I don't believe in what people or some people refer to as built-in obsolescence. And that's quite a cynical view, which says that, you know, the likes of Apple or, you know, other manufacturers, regardless of how much you pay, have built in the fact that they will not work as well in X years. You know, they are making you buy new stuff. I mean, my mum has got an XP machine, but no, that's not what I'm talking about. My wife has got a 6S. And so that's what, 6 years old now? And that still works fine. She could do with replacing the battery, but, and she's not going to get iOS 14. But apart from that, it's absolutely fine. So, you know, build quality, if you've got an affordable Android device, that may well not last 6 years. And it's just the nature of it. Like you were saying, you know, things won't last as long these days. But no, I certainly don't think that there's sort of a conspiracy out there to say, let's get them to buy something new every 2 years.
Well, I absolutely believe there is a conspiracy for that. Well, of course, look, of course there is. Let's be honest about it. Well, I mean, on that basis, then Apple need never, ever give us a new phone. We don't need the iPhone 12. I mean, what's wrong with the iPhone 11? What's wrong with the SE? Why couldn't that do us for 10, 15 years? There's no reason.
Well, things like no reason, AI are definitely going to require newer processors to work. And, you know, you see things like voiceover recognition, that new feature in 14, that isn't coming to my 8 because it can't handle it. So things like that, I think, will always go by the wayside.
Exactly. Yeah. It's driven by the software.
And they
it's
want
driven
people to have
by
the
requirement.
Full experience. I totally agree.
No, 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 my friend. You see, you're sucked into this. That's the point, you see, that they want you to buy new hardware. And the only way you get the new hardware is to get the new features. And if you get the new features, then you have to buy this thing. And so it goes on.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. They want people to have the fullest experience. So, you know, that's why they're going to incentivize people.
Well, yeah,
they don't stop working, though, do they?
But it's not. You know, well, I mean, if they wanted us to have it, they could just give us it. But they don't. They want us to pay for it, don't they?
Well, Apple are the only company for whom the margins on hardware are worth their while. I don't know how the companies survive. It's razor thin margins.
It's, not, it's not just Apple or Google or Samsung. It's everybody. Of course it is. That's how business works. If you don't keep selling stuff, if the cake shop sold one cake and then shut down, well, that'd be a bit pointless, wouldn't it? You know, of course it has to keep doing what it's doing. Otherwise, it won't make any money and survive. That's the society we live in now.
Certainly, services play a part as well. And my Apple TV works as well today as it did when we got it. And it was a second gen one, so it's ancient. And they just want you to carry on, you know, subscribing to TV Plus and to buying stuff on iTunes. So similarly, the services that are delivered through iDevices are a large part of their strategy. But I agree that...
Again, though, that's again the reality of people not buying the new hardware. So they've thought, well, we're not getting any money out of them this way. How can we get more cash out of these people? How can we, you know, squeeze the sponge even more? And the way you do it is now through services. That you're absolutely right. I think live in a world sometimes where it's this is all very nice and lovely, whereas I'm just seeing this as a great way to get money out of people. And look, I'm just as bad as anyone else. I am a ridiculous spender when it comes to certain things, especially gadgets. I don't, you know, I'm not pretending I'm not, but I don't live in some bubble. It's a bit like the people talk about being, you know, stuck in the Apple world. And it's, oh, you know, you're obsessed with Apple and, you know, you lay down at the god of Apple and you'll buy everything. And it's like, well, I know what I'm getting into here. I know what I'm doing. I'm not buying it because I'm in some cult that's telling me I have to buy this. I'm buying it because I want it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's absolutely fine. As long as we understand that, we're all good. And
no
I do understand that.
Yeah.
No, exactly. But I think that the reality is that people sometimes do feel they are being forced to. How many emails have we read out on the show? People saying, you know, I really, you know, I've got this phone, it's working really well, but I feel this pressure to buy something new. You know, and maybe that's my fault because I talk about the SE so much, and I maybe have shouted so many times, go buy one, and I maybe shouldn't. But actually, no, I mean, if your phone works for you, if the original SE is still going, okay, granted, it will be as warm as the surface of the sun with the battery in it because it's working so hard to keep up. But you know what? If it works for you and if you can get a replacement battery, then that means that doesn't go and have to be... Well, okay, I know Apple do apparently recycle these phones. So, you know, you basically give them your old phone and they turn it into a new one. But, you know, I think we just have to accept the fact that you know, this is where we are. We're not going to get to a situation where you're ever going to buy a phone, unless it was the Nokia 3310, that will last forever. Interestingly, I think the one thing about the Nokia 3310 versus any other phone since has been it's the only phone you can actually make a phone call on. One day, they might actually develop one of these smartphones that's capable of a decent phone call. Have you heard a radio phone in recently? I can barely understand a word anyone says. I'll tell you, I was listening to a radio phone in the other night, and a guy came on the phone, and at first, immediately I thought, wow, listen to the quality of this phone line. Where is this guy? Do you know where he was? He was in a payphone. Every mobile phone call was terrible. The payphone was the best sounding call in the whole show. It was incredible.
Because it's not been used in years, that's why.
Well, yeah, that, and well, it had been used, but not for phone calls. Anyway, let's move on.
Well, just go back to what Richard's saying there. So how long, say, your mobile phone that you have right now, how long are you expecting that to last if you didn't replace it? I mean, has it got a couple of years in it before you really have to start thinking about
replacing
parts? Oh, that's
not, no, you're looking at four.
I'd say four or five. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd say four or five years.
Yeah.
I mean, you think these days especially, right, if you get a contract, it's going to, especially today, because of the cost of the handsets, a lot of these contracts now are 3 years. So I would say most people, if they're getting on a contract, would expect it to live the length of that contract, which it will. The problem is people then feel the need at that point, they feel it's old because you've missed two cycles of a new phone, or in some cases, four cycles. So I think most people feel pressure to get a new phone, but that, if you didn't do that, there's really no reason why you couldn't keep that phone for 5 years, I think.
My last smartphone before I got this one didn't last. It lasted a year and a half before the motherboard started going out on it, and the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi were stopped working on it, so it needed to be replaced.
Was that an Android phone, by any chance?
Yes, it was. Let's drift on to another email.
Moving on.
Richard is going to email in also about Aira. He says, this is obviously a fantastic service for many who will need the fabulous attention to detail which the operators can provide. For those who may not be able to afford the very reasonable cost of Aira, and who may have some suitably qualified to assist them, I found that a FaceTime call to my partially sighted wife has been very good. It's not that I'm trying to save money, but it's just that to say that for some blind iPhone users, the support of someone else close to you can probably be just as good as an IRA agent. There are advantages for using someone you trust, which will include immediate knowledge of your capabilities and your weaknesses, as well as the probability that the area to be explored may well be known to a trusted friend. Now, I think Richard's suggesting your own personal wife or spouse, whatever, not his, obviously.
There's a whole new service called Richard coming soon. Richard's wife service. That does not sound right. But listen, I think this is a really interesting point. I mean, as much as I've talked about Aira, as much as I've talked about Be My Eyes, I'd say I use Be My Eyes at least once a day. Aira, I've signed up for, I've never used. I just have this feeling with Aira, because I have to make a call at first, and then it's going to be, tell me everything about yourself, and let's get your account set up and all that. I just don't have the time for that. I just want to use the service. So for that reason, I always go straight to Be My Eyes. But I cannot, at the moment, for me, see a justification for the money, although I can totally understand the benefits of it. I think about things, and this is where I guess you, although I'm saying Be My Eyes, I'm using instead of Aira, I can't really compare them. Not really. It's unfair.
Not until you've used Aira.
That's right, but I can't really compare it because they are very different services, and we've said this already. I mean, you know, I was thinking of my wife the other day. She was planning a journey, and the journey involved a bus route, a train, and then another bus. And she was saying, you know, I'll need to get onto the website, and I'll need to spend time doing all this and going through it. And I'm like, well, you could just use Aira. This is where Aira would be brilliant, because they could help with that and do that kind of PA work, if you like, for you.
And the irony is that it probably wouldn't take them more than 5 minutes, so that you could get it in the free.
That's
the free
right.
Call. It would take us days.
We haven't actually noted this down to talk about today, but there is, of course, big news regarding Aira.
Yep.
The news that they are planning to drop the continual 5 minute calls. You know, one of the things we talked about a lot was the, you know, you could essentially live on the free plan. I think we said that on the show a few times. You could
that
live on the free plan.
They wouldn't discourage you from calling them straight back after the free 5 minutes was up. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Whereas that's now changed.
Gone.
Pretty much. So I think you can make, one free call per 24 hours or 12 hours or something?
So. Yeah.
basically you will have one free 5 minute call, but when that time's up, that's it. They're obviously trying to push people onto paid plans. Some people are criticizing people who are just using it as a free service, like you, Robin, because you know, let's be honest, people are paying good money and they're saying, well, hang on a minute, if I'm paying for it and you're not, that doesn't seem right. And of course, as a business, again, like I mentioned earlier, they have to make money. And if they're not making money because they are, in fact, giving away, you know, their service, then yep, that's not going to work long term. And they've realized that. So change of direction. I'll be interested to hear what people think about that. But yeah, I think it's still a good service, I think, but you are going to have to pay for it ultimately, unless you can, as Robin says, get your call in under 5 minutes and do that once a day.
I think you should give it a go, though, because you can put off, it'll take a minute of the first 5 minute call to do a quick setup with your profile, and the rest you can, you know, postpone to another call, and then you're up and running. Just give it a go, see what you think.
I will give it a go. I mean, there's certainly plenty of reasons why I'd want to use it. That's for sure. I think for me, if there was a headset option, it would be complete for me. That's the thing that annoys me. And it's annoyed a lot of people about IRA, the lack of a headset now. But, you know, technology is moving along all the time. And I am pretty sure that IRA are not unaware of this desire for people. So they will be working on something, I'm sure. Let's go back to Richard, because I think, is there one more message
there
from him?
Is one more, yes. He says, I was very interested to hear the feature on the new Braille display from APH with a QWERTY keyboard. Karina suggested that QWERTY input was quicker than using Braille input, and this is certainly not so for most experienced Braille readers. I think that most users of contracted Braille input would agree that this method is much faster than pressing individual letters on a QWERTY keyboard. To give just two examples, inserting just the letter K in Braille followed by a space gives you the word knowledge, which is two keystrokes. Using QWERTY, you would need to type eight letters of the word knowledge followed by the space. So that's nine keystrokes. So Braille, it's 2 versus 9. Again, if you're using the Braille P followed by space, this gives you people for 2 keystrokes, whereas on the QWERTY keyboard, that requires 7. For the same word. Keep up the good work. Thank you for all your emails. That is from Richard.
Yeah, I'm glad we managed to get through your emails there, Richard. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, it is, of course, faster typing. But again, you have to have that knowledge. And I think for those people who, like myself, are coming up and learning, you know, I learned on QWERTY. I didn't learn on Braille displays. So for someone like me, it would be much faster to use a QWERTY keyboard and then read back in Braille. That's my take on it. I'll be interested to see what other people think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Lots more emails to come. We'll get to them in a minute. But first,
news from the internet.
Internet news. And Google Lookout is the app that Android lovers will be downloading in their droves. It's launched in the UK and around the world with new AI capabilities. This is the app that is essentially Microsoft's Seeing AI equivalent on Android. Seeing AI is not available for some reason on Android devices. I don't know why. It's only available on iOS. It may come to Android at some point, but you know, we've been saying that for long enough and it's never happened. But Google got ahead of it and they've got now their own one called Lookout. You don't have an Android phone, do you, Robin?
No. I have seen it in action at Mobile World Congress last March, but not on the Google stand.
You were given a personal show. Well, the rest of us poor little non-lordy people had to go and download it, so that's what I did. I've got my Pixel 3a, which is still a great phone. Going back to Richard's point, you don't have to buy the Google 4a, although I'm sure it's very nice, but you know, 3a is fine. I downloaded Lookout on it and I was very pleasantly surprised. I mean, out the gate, and I know I'm saying out the gate, it's been around for what, a year already in the States?
Yep, it has. Yeah, launched in 2019, this app.
Right, so it's been around for a while, obviously taking a while to get here, I think partly because of the database of information that it requires, especially for things like food labels, you know, the ability to, you know, hold the phone over anything, really. I mean, I was in my fridge and I was pulling things out, things that I kind of thought, I don't think you'll get this. I won't name the brands, but there was a, I actually have no idea what this thing is. It was a kind of... Well, no, no, just, no, no.
Not in his fridge.
Not my fridge. But this was like a, it was like a carton with egg white in it, egg whites or something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I had no idea what it was. But, you know, holding Lookout over it, I asked my wife, is that right? Did Lookout get that right? And she said, yep, bang on. She said, not only did it tell you what the product was, the company, the brand, it told me how much of, you know, what size it was as well, which I thought was interesting. Also... It was also fascinating to me because there were products I was learning about I didn't even realize were from a particular brand. Like I'd maybe eaten something for a while and not realized that this was actually that particular brand of product. And, you know, this is, again, the kind of world that blind people live in. They kind of know some things about some things, but not everything, because you only know what you get told or you get, you know, it's like, oh, it's custard. Well, great, it's custard. But what custard? Who made the custard? And you don't get told that information, but this did tell you that. I also liked that when it couldn't recognize a product, I was able to just turn the product around. So say it was a can of food or it was a carton, I would be able to turn it around and it would get the same information from the barcode. And it gave me a little bit of audible feedback to sort of, you know, line up the barcode properly, which was kind of nice. An intense beep, and then when it became a solid beep, you were on it, and it really only took a second for it to identify the product. Other things as well, like there's a kind of a equivalent to scene detection, which you get in Seeing AI. What you do with Seeing AI is you take a picture of a scene and it will try and tell you what's in the picture. So say it's a group of people, it will tell you how many people are there. If it's a desk, it'll try and identify the items on it. But this version on Lookout, actually, it gives you it in real time. Mm. Now, I'll give you a great example of where this is really useful. There I am, mucking around with this app, and at the same time, my wife is saying, I wonder where the keys are. And all of a sudden, Lookout says, keys! And I'm like, oh, okay, there are the keys. And suddenly it finds them. And I thought, you know, that is brilliant. That's, I mean, it was getting other things right, like the food mixer and the microwave.
And it's super quick as well, giving you
Yeah, it's fast.
Google are the king of this, aren't they?
Yeah.
They are brilliant at this.
I tried the app myself. I downloaded it, pointed it at my desk, and it was picking everything up on my desk as I was pointing the camera straight at it.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this isn't going to be 100% accurate. It was looking at my Huawei wireless earbud things, but because they were in their case, which is shaped like a giant mint, it was having trouble trying to figure out what it was. First, it was like a coaster, and then it said it was something else, but... Yeah, it's so smart. It was picking up mugs, saucers. It was picking up desk. It was picking up smart speaker as well. It picked up my Lady A device, which I thought was fantastic. I'm really impressed by that technology.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how good it was, actually. And like I say, not quite out of the gate, but certainly, you know, considering how long it's been around in comparison to something like Seeing AI, I think it's very good. So I think it's nice to see a bit of competition in this space, Robin.
Yeah, now we should say that this is coming to all Android devices, isn't it? But your That's mileage right. will vary because, there's so many different devices out there. They might not have a good enough processor. The camera might be really pretty weak. I don't know. But so, yeah, I mean, they were on the Pixels only before because I guess they wanted to have control over the experience and the quality of the feedback that you'd get. But yeah, if you've got an Android device of any flavor, give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, speaking of Android, and please do, if you've got an Android phone, check out this app. It is well worth doing. I think it's Lookout by Google is the official name. Yes. So if you're searching for it, just ask for Lookout by Google. There are many other apps called Lookout, obviously, so just be careful what you're downloading, but Lookout by Google. Yeah. No, it's not one word.
It's just Lookout as in one word.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, guys. One word.
Okay.
I think it was in the Android list. I think it was maybe third down the list, just because it was such a new app to the App Store.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But if you see, it's the developer's name is Google. It's the right one.
Okay. So there's also a talk of a new piece of hardware coming from Google, an Android TV dongle. I'm guessing this is going to go up against Apple TV. You can, of course, get a dongle at the moment from Google called the Chromecast, which plugs into your TV. And I really think this is one of those products that we don't talk about a lot. And I think it's a great little product, because what's wonderful about it is you don't really need any... It's not an accessible product, because it's not really, it doesn't do anything other than just receive content from your device. So as long as you can access your phone or your tablet, and you're able to get to the share button that sends it or casts it out to the device, you don't really do any more than that. But what they've done here is they're trying, well, clearly they're moving towards creating something with a remote control. This is the headline from, was it TheVerge.com? Google's Android TV dongle could be coming soon. They're suggesting there are going to be two new hardware devices. At least that's what's shown up in FCC filings in the States. And according to 9to5, it seems that likely that it's related to the new Android TV product that's been in the works for a while, they say. One of the things that's being talked about is an interactive media streaming device with Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. I wonder what that could be. Possibly some kind of Chromecast. But the other is for a wireless device with Bluetooth and a power cover, which 9to5 is speculating could be what's being nicknamed Sabrina, and it's remote control. Sabrina? Okay.
The Teenage Witch.
Yep.
Is that not a show? Yeah. It's suggesting that there aren't many options for Android TV just now, unless you buy a TV. You can get Sony TVs that have got Android TV built in. I think other TVs have got it as well. There aren't many Android TV on their own options. I think the only one that has been referred to here is the NVIDIA Shield, which is aimed at gamers, from my understanding. There are some others as well, but really... there aren't many options. So this would be the first type of Android TV dongle. So it's kind of moving Chromecast on a little bit. I'll be very interested to see what accessibility features are in there. I imagine there will be, because of the nature of how Google have been doing what they've been doing with accessibility on all their other products. It would be crazy if this thing didn't have TalkBack built in. I imagine it will. This will not interest you at all, Robin, because you hate television. I know that, but...
So you've got the choice of perusing it via a remote control and your TV talking versus using the Chromecast that we have already, and you're basically driving everything from your phone and you're kind of airplaying it to the TV. So yeah, I mean, horses for courses, really. Depends how much it'll cost and how accessible it'll be as to whether it'll add a lot of value compared to what you would use, you know, just use your phone and a Chromecast at the moment.
Well, I mean, I would probably argue personally, unless the accessibility is very good in whatever this will be, if it's called Sabrina, let's say that's the name. If Sabrina is fully accessible, I'll rethink that sentence. But look, if that if this new product is fully accessible, then that's great. But I kind of prefer just using my phone to do all the casting. You know, I think that would be that was fine with Chromecast. One of the things I liked about it, and you know, a little known product which I think may have been discontinued is the Chromecast Audio. That was a great little product as well. You could hook it up to any speaker, and you could turn any Bluetooth speaker or just any standard speaker, even a hi-fi, into a receiver for your audio from your phone. So you could bounce audio straight to your hi-fi. And a lot of people didn't think about that. I got it for like 15 quid. I don't know if that was a sale price or whether that was just the price it was. And I bought it because I thought, well, why not at 15 quid? Come on. But yeah, and it's and interestingly, to Richard's point earlier again, you know, still going strong, and I bought it about 5 years ago, and it's brilliant. So yeah, anyway. That's certainly one for consideration. Also, face masks. I want to bring this up. How are we all doing this? Are we all buying reusable face masks, or are we just basically littering the planet with disposable ones?
Ours are washable.
Good.
As are mine, yeah.
Excellent. Right, well, I'm the same. I got a lovely black one. At least I'm told it's black. I wanted the tartan one that Nicola Sturgeon used. I was really intrigued by this tartan one.
I might get you one, because I know where they are.
Well, here's the thing, right? I ordered two of them, and I'm still waiting.
Oh.
So either they're so popular, or they've taken all my money and ran away.
Like one with, like,
I think it's
Darth
probably
Vader
just busy.
Ah, no, it's interesting you say that, Robin. I have Darth Vader on my mask.
Yeah. There you go.
I wanted Hannibal Lecter. But that wasn't available. The little mouth shield that he has. But no, yeah, the bottom half of my as I go around the shops, the bottom half of my face is the Darth Vader mask.
Do you do the sound recognized
effect? Yeah, no. As you're walking along, because it is obviously covering your mouth when you're breathing, you do catch yourself going.
Well, I was going to say, you do it anyway, don't you? Yeah. It's just because it's so hard to breathe. And
if you've run
it's
up
now
the hill
being
to the
instantly recognisable as well, as a mother with a child pointed it out. And it's weird because I can't smile about going, oh, yeah, I've got a...
And people naturally socially distance with you, so that's good.
That's right, yeah.
Thanks.
Well, you wanted Darth... not Darth Vader, Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
I think this one might be what you're looking for.
Okay.
Because this is horrific. I mean, I'm guessing what I'm looking at here a little bit. I'm using what I've got here to try and kind of sense the look on this thing. This is a futuristic face mask with bone conduction speakers. Now you're talking.
Oh,
hey, Robin?
Yeah.
That's a great idea. This article is referring to VivZone's bone conduction audio mask. I'm not entirely sure if this is available in the UK or not. But it's basically one of these masks that you can't... It says you can't buy it on Etsy, for example. It's not been created by someone in their house, clearly. It's created specifically for exercising, engineered with protection, leisure, and comfort in mind.
Well,
not looking at it, it's utterly terrifying. But it says it's has an ultra-fine filter that functions to protect you from dust, bacteria, and other potentially harmful particles, so you can do all the usual stuff like jogging, hiking, biking, or strolling, or in my case, sitting on my sofa. But what really sets it apart from other masks is it's equipped with Bluetooth technology, so you can listen to music, take calls, and hear real-time navigation. Instead of in-ear buds, it uses bone conduction. So, you know, we're thinking here like aftershocks for your face.
I'd love to have some sort of high-tech, space-age-looking kind of half-robot-y thing on the bottom half of my face. That would be cool, with this filter and bone conduction and kind of, you know, built-in battery or something. I'd love that. I think that'd be quite cool. How much is it?
I'm desperately trying to know if we can get it in the UK.
I can only see a US price on it at the moment, which is $85.
Oof,
it does
wow.
look like something you would wear if you were going paintballing or something like that. You're covering that half of your face. People are going to see you coming. Yeah,
I would actually get that. I know I don't buy things very often, but I would actually get that.
So would I. I'd love to try that out, because I'm guessing with the way that the mask goes over your ears, that's obviously where the bone conduction speakers will be to get the audio in through your cheekbones. That does sound quite appealing, actually. Yeah, I think I'll be contacting a few friends of mine in the States and saying, who fancies buying me one of these and sending it across? So, yeah, there we go. Anyway, one more story before we get back to some emails. This is one from you, Robin, so you can tell us more about this. Harvard students design a haptic feedback vest to direct people with low vision. What on earth is this about?
So we've been talking about various devices recently that will, you know, help you get around, robot guide dog, etc. This, I think, is really good. It's saying that students at Harvard have invented this vest, which gently inflates different panels on it to different degrees to give you information about obstacles that are coming up and how close they are. So if you've got something that inflates really quite quickly and presses, you know, significantly into your right side, for example, you'd automatically think, oh, you know, something's about to biff me in the right hand side. But it doesn't use sonar. And it explicitly says we're not using haptics like buzzes and things, because that can become overwhelming. And we've talked about that before, about how, you know, you can have this buzz fest going on and you just don't know where it's, what it's relating to or it's from or whatever. And you just kind of get paralyzed by the information. So it actually uses a phone that gets strapped onto the chest part of the vest. And it uses, I think, it doesn't say it in the article, but I think it's using MeasureKit, which is a new API that comes within iOS that can very accurately look at, you know, corners, edges, planes and that sort of thing, and measure them and measure how far away they are as well if you're moving by triangulation. And it basically says it puts an outline around everything that's coming up towards you, and it calculates how far away it is and in which direction, and then it inflates that part of the vest. And I'm actually looking forward to this to see if it, you know, if it ever does become available, to see what that experience feels like versus, you know, buzzing in on your wrist or whatever, or soundscapes 3D instructions coming into your ears with the Bose frames, for example. So yeah, that'd be quite good. And if you don't respond to the information in time, you've got a nice inflated cushion in case you bang into that lamppost or something on your right hand side. So yeah, I think it looks really good.
You see, I've eaten a lot of chocolate over the years, so you've have some of that protection in place. inadvertently, granted, but it's kind of worked out for me. So maybe I don't need that, but I could do with the navigation, that's for sure.
I think it looks really good.
Yeah, I kind of like the sound of this, weirdly. Okay, well, there you go. That's your news from the internet. Let's get back to the emails. Yes, I know, I've got that. Move on. Email.
We get email.
Right, we're all fed up with the jingle now, so let's move on. Right, what else have we got?
I tell you what, I'll put it in the notes of the podcast as well. We'll do a link to see if people like that jingle or not. We'll put like a little straw poll.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Hello, emails Jim. On my desktop computer, I use NVDA as a screen reader. How would I get OCR to work via NVDA? We have tried, but have been unable to find how to either download or find how to use OCR within NVDA so I can read own printed documents. Is this the best option for occasional document reading? I look forward to, hopefully, with your reply with any help. That's from Jim in Burnley in Lancashire.
Okay, well, I've been checking this out with our Sean Priest, who regularly turns up on this program, as well as with me on others. And, I did ask him about this because I don't know the answer. I don't use NVDA, but he does. It doesn't seem as if there is an OCR option, at least for an external scanner, that you might be looking for there in NVDA. I think JAWS has got this built in. Rob, in fact, I'm pretty sure it does.
It has, yes. You can scan a document and it will actually initialize that from a scanner. But NVDA does have the ability to recognize text within images.
Yeah, that's right. Or documents.
Documents that are images of text. Yeah, just do NVDA plus R and that will start the scan. And then you get popped into a kind of a virtual window where you can just arrow up and down through the text. It does say in the instructions, though, that if you are using a language anything other than English, which is the default, well, I suppose, or it might be Spanish if you're in Spain. But anyway, if you want to scan or recognize text in a language other than your default one, then just pop into the NVDA menu, go to General, and then there's an item called Windows 10 OCR. And in there, there's a drop down where you can choose the language that you want to have recognized.
Okay. Yeah, but it doesn't seem that there's any kind of option to scan a document and have it read instantly. That's one thing I do love about JAWS, but then, yeah, you know, how much are you paying for that versus free? I mean, come on.
And I would say that the Windows 10 OCR is actually really good, the engine.
Well, that's the point, though, isn't it? I mean, so the Windows 10 OCR is going to be the answer here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, brilliant. Well, I hope that helps. What else have we got?
We're going to stick with OCR. This email is from Don. Is there any OCR device which can be used with a Braille display via Bluetooth? I can use my Braille display along with Seeing AI on my iPhone, but I am not very steady at holding the phone over a document and would be interested in a standalone OCR piece of equipment which would be more stable and comfortable to use. I would like to know if any supplier has any product of this type. Thanks for a good program. That's from Don.
Well, there are various ways to do this, ultimately. You talk about standalone equipment. It gets very expensive, Robin, when you start to go down the specialist route. You could be talking maybe $1,000+ for standalone OCR readers. Whereas you can use your smartphone, and like you're saying, you've obviously got problems there with your hands holding the phone, and totally understandable. Now, what is it called? The giraffe?
Reader.
Readers. It's the giraffe phone standard holder thing.
So if you go to giraffe-reader.com, then you can see the info there. If you search for it on Amazon, it says it's not available, but it is still from their own website at giraffe-reader.com, and it's £32. And I think that's well worth every penny because it will allow you to just forget about the positioning of the phone. It's got its optimal distance. You can just scan page after page and just flip the pages of your book over or whatever it might be. For me, that's the answer.
Yeah, it's really simple as well. It's not cardboard, but it's not cardboard, is it? But it's a kind of a what would you call it?
Stiff plastic, I think.
Stiff plastic, yeah. Yeah, really good, really good. And that's the best way, honestly. It's the cheapest way to set up OCR. And if you've got something like a Bluetooth keyboard or using a Braille display, that's actually perfect. You think about it, that's actually the best solution, really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, I think so.
Because you don't have to use, you don't have to bother touching the phone. And if you don't have Face ID, it's even better there. Okay, what else?
Roger emails in with a question. I am a JAWS user with JAWS 2020 Home Edition. A couple of questions that I can't find the answers to. One, how can I tell which version of Windows I have? Can you talk me through the keystrokes to find out this information? And two, when I use Narrator, it talks far too much. When I'm in Excel, it gives the cell and row information before giving the content of the cell. Now, how can I get it to read the information in the cell first? Most of the time, that's all. I don't need the cell and the row details. Your help would be much appreciated. Thanks. That's from Roger.
So I'll jump in. To get the version of Windows, it's Control Insert V. And that will tell you what version it is, and it'll even tell you like the point such and such and such. So we're on 2004 at the moment, but it'll give you numbers after that as well. So Control Insert V, and it'll just speak it. It won't pop anything up. What was the other question?
The narrator. Oh, yeah. Narrator talking too much.
There is verbosity settings in there, isn't there? But I don't think it can necessarily. There's nothing fine grain like there is in JAWS.
No, so. I think there is now. I think there is now. I mean, bear in mind, again, it depends on the version you're running. And this might be leading back to the first question. I think you want to make sure that you are on the very latest version of Windows. Because if you can get onto 2004, I mean, to be honest, 1909 would be fine. You know, if you've got that, you have a lot of the features. It's not a huge amount of additional features in 2004, but you know, being up to date is helpful. If you can check that first, because once you're set up there, go into the Narrator settings, which usually as soon as you turn on Narrator will pop up unless you've asked it to never do that again. You know, go into the settings. You will be able to I did find settings for table and table announcements, because when I went through the settings, it was actually, there was a lot of options in there. And you can choose how it will speak when it goes to tables. I didn't go into a huge amount of detail, but I did spot the options. So do check that.
It talks about row and column headings, but I don't think it'll. Well, certainly it might. That might affect Excel. Absolutely, yeah, that might do that. Yeah.
Narrator is very talkative. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's. I mean, I'll be honest. There are times I've turned JAWS off and just used Narrator. I must admit, I've been using Narrator now on off for, you know, since we started talking about it, you know, sort of.
I wouldn't use it more and more. You don't get the same amount of feedback.
But yes, all right, fine.
Sorry.
Funny man. co-hosts with material. But no, here's the thing. I think that it's very verbose in comparison to JAWS, although arguably JAWS is equally as verbose at certain points, sometimes too verbose. I mean, especially see, if you've got Narrator on and you're in the update settings. Oh, my Lord, does it ever shut up? No, because it's reading every single thing. It's constantly bouncing it to whatever's updating and the percentage installs and all the rest. It's an absolute nightmare. But I do think it's good, and I think that it's, you know, but what I was going to say was I've actually been moving back to JAWS more to get stuff done. I think it's just because, again, I was naturally became a JAWS user first over something like Narrator, hence why I've been doing that. But yeah, interesting. Anyway, sorry, let's continue.
And Roger,
I'm drifting off into my own little world here.
Roger, if you have any other issues or any questions from that, then you can just email in again and we can cover it in a later week. So this last email, I guess, for today is from Andy, funnily enough.
Hi. Oh, have you been emailing in, have you?
I've been emailing in. How great am I? Hi, Stephen, Robin, and Email Andy. My name is also Andy, and I was inspired to write this email by another email I heard this morning about a listener who wanted an extended list of TV channels to peruse. I use an app called Freeview, which gives you a full 7-day listing of every available Freeview channel that I use, and I use it on an iPhone with VoiceOver, but I believe it's also available on the Android platform. It has the ability to go back 7 days and watch programs on demand on certain channels. I only found RNIB Connect Radio by accident after lockdown started, so I am a reasonably new listener, but I enjoy your show very, very much. That's from Andy.
Oh, thank you, Andy. Really appreciate that. Glad you tuned in. Well, there you go. Robin?
Well, thanks, Andy. Yeah, Freeview. I mean, this is amazing. What was you asking?
I just had to throw you under the bus on that one because I know you hate television.
No,
so I'm going to have to throw this to
him. He was going to answer that.
I actually worked with the Freeview guys that ensured that this was accessible. So I did know about it. Haven't used it since the testing because, yeah, like you say, you know, don't do TV. But going back to the kind of AirPlay type scenario, even if you hadn't got the very latest Apple TV, for example, then just use that app, AirPlay it all to the TV, and then you've got like a Freeview box or a smart TV, you know, all that sort of thing. So regardless of whether the Freeview app or the equivalent apps on your Sony model or whatever it might be, you know, how accessible they are. So that would be a really good option, I think. Or just listen to it on your phone or watch it on your iPad or whatever. But yeah, really, really good.
There are a couple of interesting anomalies when it comes to bouncing apps, just on that point, on bouncing an app to the TV. ITV Hub is a good example of this, where you bounce the program you're watching to, say, Apple TV. And what it does is it only sends the audio. Mm-hmm. It doesn't send the picture. And the irritating part about that is that on the app on the phone, it's the only place on Apple and Android you can actually get the audio description. Mm-hmm. Whereas the ITV Hub app that's on Apple TV doesn't have the option for audio description. Yes, I know I'm banging my own head against the table as we speak. It is just ridiculous.
And is that a DRM thing?
No, that is just they haven't got around to updating the Apple TV app yet. It's as simple as that. And if they do, and when they do, then life will be filled with happiness. But until that point, we don't get that. So it's kind of irritating, to put it mildly. But yeah, there you go. Anyway, look, thank you so much for your emails this week. And we will get to more next week.
Lots more discussion.
One page gone.
Three pages gone.
Wow, that's now 12 to go. There we go. We should get there. I know. I was reading through the emails, and one email that we got came in said, "Based on your current reading speed at this point, we're reading through the emails." They said we should probably say Merry Christmas, which I think is probably fair. Frankly.
Which Christmas, though? That's the question.
Well, exactly. That's right. Don't specify a year. Listen, that's almost it from us. Thank you so much. Next week on the show, Red Sail will be joining us, host of Read On here on RNIB Connect Radio. He will be joining us to talk about his computer buying experience based on my advice to him. Did it all go horribly wrong, or was it an unbridled success? Well, I think we all know the answer to that. No, it wasn't a disaster. It was great. So we'll find out about that from Red. And we'll get your responses to my thoughts on computers as well. If you've got any more thoughts on that and the best computers to buy, to share with others, get in touch. TechTalk@rnib.org.uk. Rob and Andy, as always, thanks, guys. Catch you next week.
Thanks, guys.